Please rise for the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please remain standing for a moment of silent meditation. Also, today marks 2 weeks since the senseless school shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, in which 17 students and staff members were killed. Please join us in a moment of silence at this time to honor the victims and their families and show our support for their community. Thank you. At this time, I'll turn it over to Dr. Graham.
Good evening. Once again, it's nice to see such a large number of audience members at our board meetings. I know we have some student groups that we'll be honoring momentarily. I just would like to, there's been a lot of concerns and a lot of debate since the incident that Mr. Falco just referred to. And so just in an effort to synthesize some of the thoughts that are going around the school district, I'd like to just share a statement with our community with regard to our school safety and our school security. So I would like to take this time to discuss safety and security as it is a priority for all of us. I am a parent of three students who attend public schools, and I share your concerns when sending my children to school each day. Tonight, as we keep the victims, family, and community members of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in our hearts, thoughts, and prayers, we are hopeful that together the Sachem Central School District can use our collective wisdom, resources, and concern for one another to assess our security and safety measures and to make improvements as a school district. It's important to note that there is a process as well as a conversation that must take place before we rashly make any decisions on how the district moves forward. In recent weeks, our community members have come together and shared with administration and board members suggestions and improvements that the district can take, and we're grateful for this input, and we are committed to reviewing all feasible options at this time. I would like to take this opportunity to share with all of you our current security measures, as well as the Board of Education and district's commitment to security moving forward. Last April, you may be aware that we prepared our Smart Schools Investment Plan, in which the Board of Education allocated more than $3.5 million towards the installation of security vestibules for every building, visitor management systems that scan in the individual, and additional security cameras throughout the district. And through the process of designing security vestibules, we consulted our BOCES safety consultant to ensure the greatest efficacy of the vestibule's design. We learned last month that NYSED's facilities department has approved the vestibules. However, the overall Smart Schools program for the district has not yet received approval, which means we can't be reimbursed for the projects. It appears at this time that there's a 12 to 18 month approval process with the State Education Department. So to hopefully expedite this process, we've reached out to our local senators, our assemblymen, and the Commissioner of Education, and especially in light of what's happened, we're hoping that they can do whatever they can to expedite the approval of these security measures. We have started to explore with the Board of Education potential alternatives. You know, if we can't, we don't want to wait 12 to 18 months for the installation of these vestibules. So if we can't get the process expedited, are there ways that the Board of Ed can act now to install the security vestibules and visitor management systems? And we're hopeful that there are ways that we'll be able to do that. While the Smart Schools Investment Plan includes the allocation of funds for hundreds of additional cameras, we currently have over 1,000 cameras installed throughout the district at all of our buildings. And those are monitored, the grounds, they monitor the interior of our buildings, and they're monitored at a central station by our security staff 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Furthermore, every year, our district security staff undertake a review of our safety protocols, and we make adjustments to those protocols to increase the safety for our students and staff. There have been several drills practiced at all of our buildings since the start of school, and there are more drills scheduled throughout the rest of the school year. And our staff regularly debrief about the changes and adjustments that are necessary following each of these drills. Later this evening, there will be a portion of our meeting that will afford residents the opportunity to speak on items that are not on this agenda. This would be the time that all of you can weigh in and comment on our security and your concerns. And we look forward to you sharing your thoughts and suggestions with regard to security and safety. We ask that in our comments, we are mindful of the individuals who are currently serving these roles and capacities, and understand that everybody here shares your interests of having the safest school environment for all of our children. Additionally, as you are all aware, districts across the nation are faced with threats made by individuals, whether it be by someone in one of our schools or in another state or another country. I'd like to reassure you that each of these instances, when brought to our attention, are taken very seriously. We work directly with law enforcement, and if the individual is found to be one of our students, we will discipline them fully in accordance with our code of conduct. Please understand that we cannot and will not comment on specific student instances in this meeting. Also, as we seek to collaborate with the community on this highest priority, we will be hosting a community forum on school safety, and that will be later this month, and we'll release more information about that to all of you. We invite every one of you to attend. This evening, we will recognize a few students for community service activities, as well as the champion and runner-up of our spelling bee. We will also hold a budget presentation, which I hope you'll all stay for, as a part of our regular meeting. So that's my opening superintendent's report. I'm going to hand the microphone over to Ms. Hines for our community service presentations.
Recognize some community service activities that went up in Sagamore, and there were three that came to mind to me, but they were student-driven. We had four students who, on their own, initiated projects near the holidays, some before, some just after, to do community service, and it was great activities, and I wanted to recognize these four students. The first two are Chloe Finelli and Samantha Tristano. They started a Christmas card drive for a child in Maine who was terminally ill. He wasn't going to, unfortunately, wasn't going to make it till Christmas, and he wanted to celebrate the holidays. So they got this idea to start a car drive, and unfortunately, in the very early stages, the child did pass away. So they really wanted to provide support, so they hooked up with one of our teachers, Ms. Giacobbe, and they did a Christmas car drive for the troops. So they collected over 700 cars through clubs, classes, and individual donations, and sent them to a staff master sergeant overseas, and they were delivered for the holidays. That was great activities by Chloe and Samantha. I guess I'll go, do I bring them up or do we go for it? Chloe and Samantha, are you guys? Person being recognized, Adriana Ancelari, did a coat drive. Again, on her own, she initiated the project. She worked with our student government, Ms. Sorrentino, to complete it, but she did this on her own. Every day she made announcements over the last week, which is very nerve-wracking. You know, she come every day and make that announcement. She collected over 8 bags of coats. She started just after the break, which was pretty well thought out, because everyone got the new clothes for the holidays. So the old clothes were time to move them out of the house. So she started the coat drive and got many, many coats. She did it in grade six last year in Sagamore, and grade 5 before that in Waverly. So again, this is something she did on her own. It was a lot of work. We're very proud of her. She wanted to help those in need. So Adriana, come on up. The last person being recognized is Casey Godot. Again, she wanted to help those in need. She had a thought after the hurricanes which put a lot of people in various regions of the country in extreme need, and she wanted to do a hat, clothes, club, and sock drive. So she collected over 75 items collected in bins in various spots in the building. And she, again, made announcements every day. It was driven by her. It was her work. She worked with Dr. Galligan a little bit with it, but it was something student derived and student worked on. Posters around the building to advertise, and she made announcements every day. So during December, she did the drive on Little Holloway Bridge. Very proud of her, too. So Casey, come on up.
Yes.
Good evening, President Falco, members of the Board of Education, Dr. Graham, members of the Cabinet, and community members. We'd like to thank you for recognizing Linwood Avenue for their community service efforts. Tonight, Mrs. Rafferty, our school social worker, will share with you the efforts put forth by the Linwood community that have directly supported our Linwood families.
The ones that actually directly involved me. So the first activity our student leadership Lighthouse Club helped with was our Thanksgiving food drive. So at Linwood, every year we have a food drive, and this year we actually were able to help 29 Linwood families. So what's great about this is that we're helping our own, and the Lighthouse students' leaders were amazing. They wrote up the announcements for this. They went around collecting the food every day. And then we had a really amazing pack out one morning where we went through and put pictures on boxes and loaded every family up for delivery. So that was their assistance to me for that. And then we went right into our giving tree. So for the month of December, we pretty much those same families, we ended up doing a very large drive, including not just the students but staff. And we actually, I think, helped 30 families there. And we were able to provide everything from wish lists. I'm sorry, my back's to you. I'm trying to talk to the kids. Wish list items like their favorite toys, things they might have hoped for, in addition to what maybe Santa or what they received for Hanukkah. But also coats, pajamas, fuzzy slipper socks, all sorts of things. So again, 30 families. And the Lighthouse students really helped me. Every morning collecting all of the gifts that came in from the community, coordinating it, and again, we had a really fun pack out. So those are the two activities, and I thank the kids for helping me. And I just want to say, you guys matter, so I really hope you keep giving back, and you keep doing this in middle school and high school, because it's so important to help others.
Okay, thank you, Mrs. Rafferty. In addition to Thanksgiving baskets and the Holiday Giving Tree collection, the Linwood community has also provided 2,300 cans of soup for our Super Bowl collection that were donated to the Lighthouse Mission in Patchogue, 100 Valentine's for Vets goodie bags for our veterans at the Northport VA. During the month of March, we will continue our annual collection for making spring baskets for the Stony Brook Pediatric Hospital. Last year, we were able to create 30 beautiful spring baskets for students who had been admitted. Our goal this year is to create 35 baskets. In April, we will also continue our tradition of collecting pennies for patients. Last year, we collected over $3,000 for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and the Fight Against Cancer. Our goal for this year will be to raise $3,500. Tonight, we have the Linwood Lighthouse team here on behalf of the school to be recognized for our community's efforts in making the world a better place. At this time, I'd like to welcome the Linwood Lighthouse team to join us up here and to thank them for all of their efforts in helping and organizing these events. Thank you.
Good evening, Dr. Graham, Mr. Falco, board members, cabinet members. When we were given this task of picking someone in your building that does something so incredible, it's difficult because at McComas we have so many different organizations, our leaders club, our student clubs, all doing an abundance of things, the Super Bowl, the Cereal Bowl. It was a lot. So we sat with the BLT. I sent a large list. We asked to condense it. So when I sat with the BLT and we came up with all the things, there was one common thread, and that was our fabulous social worker, Mrs. Robin Greco, who is really quite a... Karen Greco. We have... Miss Greco is a quiet strength at McComas and has been such a help in so many ways. But one of the ways that she works very successfully is with the students in doing a lot of the charitable events. The Thanksgiving baskets, which lots and lots of families get a very nice Thanksgiving. The holiday, she worked with North and other entities to give some families a very nice holiday. She works for the Pennies for Patients with the students going around to each of the rooms to collect the patients to the tune of over $4,000 last year that was collected for that. So for tonight, we would like to thank Ms. Greco for all of her hard work. She's dying right now. In fact, when I was announcing it, I announced it to the whole staff. Otherwise, she wouldn't have come if she wasn't there. But so I want to thank you for coming today.
Entire life, I swear. So I'd like to call it Miss Aubrey. She actually ran over at Chippewa, and then we also have Mr. Sabin from Tamarack, and then we also have and then we have Laura as well over at Grundy Avenue.
I thought I did a good job of selling the budget presentation, but we still seem to have some people leaving. So, I can't give this stuff away. So we are going to move forward with our budget presentation this evening, and Mr. O'Keefe's going to come up. And certainly as he's getting ready, it's fantastic to honor all of these community service events and the students who are involved in outreach in our community. As Ms. Kleinman mentioned, it's very difficult to choose one group or, you know, a couple of groups because we have so many things happening throughout our district. But it's been great to spotlight and highlight all of those activities. And we have one more group who will be honored at our next board meeting. So without further ado, Mr. O'Keefe, for our budget presentation.
All right. Good evening, everybody. This is our second presentation. Here's the timeline of our current presentation and our future presentations. There are still three more. The next meeting will be primarily curriculum related, and four will start to fine-tune and hone the final budget, and by the April 11th meeting, we'll know what the final state aid numbers are, so we can finalize the budget leading up to the April 18th budget adoption. And then, of course, the budget vote is May 15th this year. So just a recap of what we did last time real quickly, and all of this material is on our website, and it's available after every presentation. I'll put this one up tomorrow. We went over the non-instructional areas, general support, student transportation, employee benefits, our debt service payments, and any intra-fund transfers. And in that presentation, we covered about 45% of the initial draft budget, or about $148 million worth of potential expenditures. So tonight, again, a lot of areas to cover. And again, I cover them in an overview. The board does have the detailed information, the line-by-line piece, the notes behind each piece. But just for these initial discussions, we put it up in the functional groups, and these are the functional groups that we'll cover this evening. So it's everything related to student activities and support services throughout the district, all the way from athletics to special education to health services, psychologists, things of that nature. I'd like to just share some pictures that we have up on Facebook. Great to see the kids. The first areas we're going to cover this evening are athletics administration, physical education, health services, and interscholastic athletics. Now, the first line is athletics administration. That's the athletics office in general. That's the director, the assistant director, the two athletic trainers, the clerical staff, things of that nature. And as you can see, year to year, the budget is relatively flat, a slight decrease just due to changes in staffing from the prior year. Physical education, that's just really supplies and materials for each of the buildings for phys ed. The only other change this year is they're asking for a little additional monies for upgrades to the cardio equipment and maintenance on the Project Adventure equipment. So there's a modest increase there. Health services, this is health services throughout the district. This could be the nurses that we have here. This is the health service fees we pay for our students that go to outside placements, things of that nature. And you'll see it's about a $100,000 increase. Some modest things. There was some changes, obviously, collective bargaining agreements, some increases for physician-related expenses that we needed, and some increases of health services to other districts. And interscholastic athletics, that's our athletic program. And you will see a sizable increase there in this proposed budget. It's about $220,000. $203,000 or so, you'll see down at the bottom. I'll go over that in a second. And another $30,000 or so of that increase is just additional supplies and materials that are being requested throughout the district for the program. So one of the things that we added to the athletic program this year in the initial draft budget is some new equipment. They haven't had any equipment-related purchases in a number of years. We were able to scramble at the beginning of this year because we did have issues with our scoreboards at the high schools for our football fields to repair those instead of replacing them. But for next year, we're looking at some baseball score upgrades. East does have a scoreboard. North does not. So right now we're planning on possibly putting one in over at North and either upgrading the one at East End or replacing it. We're not really certain on that yet. Three protective gym floor covers. We are in the process of refinishing our gym floors. These would be covers for the high school and for Samoset, but these floor covers are also shared building to building if other buildings need it. So like when we have the Festival of Trees at North, we lay these covers out so that the gym floor isn't damaged by the traffic. Or if testing is going on in a gym, we put the floor cover down so when the chairs and tables are put up, there isn't damage on the floor. Two pieces of equipment are elevated scorers tables, one for each high school. They're looking to purchase four ADA-compliant portable bleachers, two for each high school, and new wrestling mats for high school North and East with the appropriate racks to store them. Were there any questions on this component of the budget? No. Okay. Just to give you a glimpse, I mean, obviously when we take a look at the athletic budget, you know, it's $2.8 million, and just to give you a snapshot of what that includes, the bulk of it obviously is our athletic teams. So I'm not going to go through this in depth. You have it in the presentation, and again, it'll be up on the website. But just to give the public an idea of, you know, what our sports offerings are, what sports are offered in the fall, the winter, the spring, and what the costs are related to those activities. And down at the bottom, you'll see that, you know, over 4,400 students participate on sports teams. Now, some of them might be the same student on different teams, but overall there are 4,400 student participants, 241 coaches, and a total of 137 teams throughout the district. I'm going to move on to special education, CSE, and related services. First line is our Office of Student Services. That's the primary special education budget. As you'll see, there is a rather sizable increase monetarily. It's about $1.86 million. Or about 4%. Student support services are growing. We have a proposed or a projected need for about $500,000 in additional BOCES tuition for students going to BOCES placements, similar $500,000 for students going to private and public placements. We've earmarked about $460,000 in additional speech needs at the elementary level. And then there's also been some salary shifts in this line and in other lines. Two of the staff members that work in this office have been paid over time within the 611 grant. You know, that grant funding is getting restricted. My proposal is to move those two members back to the general fund. That would be one of the assistant directors as well as the data specialist. So that's part of the increase. That's another $240,000. Next line is labeled CSE, or Committee on Special Education. Things in that category are summer CSE meetings, the cost to pay staff to come in during the summer, certain testing that goes on for special education students. But it also, there are two lines now in that budget for contractual related services, and that could be your OT or your PT, things of that nature that we contract out for. And a new line that's been added this year, which is for contractual nursing services. There's an increased need for nursing services, whether it be student supports in the building or more students that need supports on school buses coming into school each day. So we broke those two expenses out. The $200,000 increase that you're seeing is primarily based on increases in nursing costs. The psychologist line and the social worker lines, those are just staff members. There's no additional costs in there. And you will see some shifts. You know, the psychologist line, it would appear that it's going down $100,000 or so, and the social worker line looks as if it's going up a few hundred thousand dollars or so. The same number of employees are working throughout the district. These, again, are shifts where we're moving either staff into the 611 grant where it's appropriate or moving them back to the general fund where it's more appropriate to have them in the general fund. Were there any questions from the board in this area? Laura?
Thank you, John. With regard to the social worker and school psychologists in our building, I know years back we had made cuts when we had financial constraints. In light of the recent tragedy, and even we have been discussing the shift towards a whole child education and looking towards the emotional and social well-being of our students, has there been any thought process to increasing the social worker and school psychologists? And as of now, how many social workers do we actually have working in the high schools?
I don't know if Dr. Morrow or Ms. Tuttle have that information at hand.
How many? We have, in each of our high schools, we have four psychologists, and we have one social worker at one and two at the other. One is a transition worker, is a transition psychologist.
So the high school that no longer social. Has a transition social worker, who's handling?
A transition teacher. Same job description, same role.
But a teacher, no offense to any teachers, it does not have the resources or the training, I would think, that a social worker would have.
For the transition role, they do. It's not a typical social worker position.
Only because my son mm-hmm. used the services of yeah. the social worker mm-hmm. for transition specifically. And I can tell you he wouldn't be employed now without having the social worker having the training that they had.
The transition training.
Correct.
Or the transition teacher has the same transition training and supports that the social worker does for that
so
spot.
So the teacher can act in a role as a social worker the same as having a social worker in that building?
Same, only for the transition. A teacher can't function as a social worker if we wanted them to counsel, if we wanted them to do social work type responsibilities.
Right. So what,
but in the transition position, the answer to your question would be yes.
Right. So I guess my question is then, to lose a social worker and not replace them, you've actually lost a social worker in a building in a high school where when we talk about tragedies and things that happen, we just said it in the SAFE committee meeting, pointing out kids that are at risk and having the resources to help them in a building is as important as other things.
I'm not exactly sure what the question is,
yeah.
Ms. Lattery. I
mean,
formerly the transition services were handled by a social worker, right?
Correct.
So that person served in the capacity of transition counselor.
Correct, but was also a social worker for the building.
Well, no, they did not serve that function. They served solely the function of transition.
Okay.
So we've taken that function from a social worker,
okay.
given it to a teacher, so that function is still fulfilled. and we haven't had a loss or a decrease in the social worker services.
So having one social worker at a high school?
I mean, ideally, given the needs that our students have and that all students have, we would advocate for increases in all mental service, mental health service providers in all of our schools. Unfortunately, we don't live in a world where we have an endless budget, and so we have to make decisions. But we believe that we can continue to service our students with the level of staffing that's provided.
Okay. That was my question. Yeah. So we're comfortable with the current level of service.
I would imagine that Ms. Tuttle would probably sit there and advocate for five more social workers. and I don't want to necessarily just, yeah.
We'll
have a different conversation, right? But I think that we can continue to provide the function of social work with our current level staffing as proposed in the budget.
Thank you.
Anything further from the board? And just to give you a breakdown, because obviously, you know, just clicking back real quick, special education is a large component of the budget, almost $45 million. And just to give the public an idea of, you know, what type of cost going into this, I just give you a snapshot of what adds up to the bulk of the monies that you saw on the preceding slide. So obviously, most of the budget is staff-related, $30.4 million. We have about $675,000 in public school placements. These are Sachem students that are attending special education programs in neighboring districts. It could be Three Village or any other district within the area. We have private school placements, $4.6 million. We have nearly $7.5 million in BOCES placements and an additional $1 million in BOCES special occupation education. This is not the general OCED that we discussed. No. No. Special education BOCES services are not aidable. What you would possibly receive is high-cost aid. So each child that's in the special education program is stacked. They're reported to the state. Every service that child receives is recorded in this database. Once the child reaches a threshold, any cost over and above that threshold, that's what's aidable. So when you look at like the state aid runs and you see that category of high-cost aid, that's what's driving that special education cost. Other BOCES expenditures, like general OCED, those are aidable.
So whenever we get aid, it's for the next year.
Right, so monies that you spend this year with BOCES are given to you next year in aid. Right. So it doesn't align with the expenditure. Next year there could be a big drop-off in BOCES expenditures, and you really needed the money this year because you were spending the money this year, but next year is when you get the aid.
On yes, average, sir. What's been our high-cost aid?
Do you have that handy? About $1 million. And last category we're just going to touch on is federal programs, AIS, ENL, and co-curricular. So the federal programs office is basically flat. The only minor decrease that you see there is just some clerical changes due to retirements and shifts in staff. The special needs line, which is that A2270 line, that's primarily your ENL programs, your English language learners, as well as your academic support services for students that need additional supports. So you're seeing about $228,000 in increase over the current year. At the beginning of this year, as we closed out the budget process last year, we identified the need for two additional FTEs in ENL. You're seeing those costs now in next year's proposed budget. We initially held those monies in contingency. Needs were realized. We did move forward with those staff members. So obviously next year we'll now budget for them. And then there was also just some minor reclassification. We did find through the budget process, you know, certain staff members being charged to this line that were being charged to gen ed lines that actually belonged in the special needs line. So it's just a realignment of staff. And co-curricular activities are basically the student clubs. And I just give you a quick synopsis on the bottom. So that's student clubs, it could be honor societies, and other social and supplemental learning opportunities available to all students. In 17-18 right now, there are a total of 142 clubs or groups district-wide. And again, there's a large number of participation at the high school and middle school level. There's 4,200 students on rosters, on clubs in both high schools. And again, this could be a child that's in one or more clubs. It's not necessarily 4,200 students. And the same at the middle school level is 1,450 students. At the elementary schools, they also have some club choice, obviously not as extensive at the secondary levels. A variety of the clubs that they have are listed at the bottom. It could be art, drama, leadership clubs, Renaissance programs, Special Olympics, things of that nature. And obviously, you are seeing an increase here on this line, and I'll go on to that in the next slide. It's about a $60,000 increase, and there are some proposals being brought forward to add additional activities. So what did we include for 18-19 in the current proposed draft budget? We took everything that's in this current budget, and we rolled it over. So North and East and the middle schools and the elementary schools all got the same funding level they got this year, plus we're proposing some additional activities. So right now, the high schools have about 33 clubs each. The variety depends on the building. Different clubs have different stipend amounts, so the buildings are given a budget to work with. So as long as they stay within that budget, one building may have more clubs than the other because certain clubs have a lower stipend. And we're proposing five new clubs. The ones on the table right now, and these are subject to change, or a Leo's Club, a DECA Club, art, music, and photography at all high schools. Same thing at Seneca and Sagamore. We gave them their current mix, which is about 15 clubs apiece, and we're proposing two additional AA-level clubs. Again, that's a monetary amount, I believe, off the top of my head. I think it was about $4,100 additional per building. And elementary schools, we're adding one additional AA club, which is about $2,084. So altogether, the additions, if we were to move forward with this proposal, are about an additional $60,000. Any questions? Yes.
So, John, when we started out years ago with the clubs, we had to make some budget cuts. And originally, I think we had around 600,000 or just over 600,000.
Yeah, I just flashed back to that just to refresh. 2014-15, we did spend nearly $640,000 on clubs. Obviously, in 15-16, when we were in financial crisis, we nearly cut it in half.
Right.
So we're slowly trying to move back to where we were, yes.
Right. So we've been building up to try to put some of the clubs back in. And we've had a lot of discussions about the clubs as far as making sure that we're doing it effectively and efficiently and not having just, you know, four students in one club and running it for the whole year. So since we have the budget discussion now and we've brought it up before, I just want to see, and I know that Dr. Graham had sent us a lot of the information about clubs in our packet to give us some background on the clubs. I just want to ensure that as we move forward for next year and we're increasing the budget again, that we do the clubs the right way and that we have advisors and that we have rosters and that we have a mission statement for each club.
You don't want an advisor sitting in a room alone
and
no one showing up or two people showing up.
Right.
I do believe Ms. Hines' office is working with Dr. Graham's office to put together a comprehensive evaluation of all the existing clubs. And this initial proposal is part of that research that they've done with discussion with the buildings.
Right, because there are some clubs that meet a lot, and the advisors put in a lot of time, and then there's some clubs that should be meeting and maybe aren't meeting as often as they should. So, and the information was sent to us as far as how many are in each club, but we didn't get to see the rosters. So, you know, I know other school districts, what they do on a monthly and this is something we can discuss again, but on a monthly basis, the advisors will send up the rosters or their activities for the month to administration of the building, and then it will be sent up to the board members so we could see what's going on with the clubs and see how often they're meeting. And it also makes us look at if a club is not getting the participation that we anticipated, that maybe next year let's talk about doing another club that
different club,
the kids have more interest in.
Absolutely.
If you don't mind, I'm just going to weigh in on that. I think there's a couple things there. One, when we look at the total number of clubs at our high schools in particular, that 33 or 34 number that John had just mentioned, when we think about what you and I would probably consider to be a club, I think that the number of actual clubs available for students is much lower, because out of that number are all of the honor societies that we have, and that ranges from National Honor Society to Math Honor Society, World Language Honor Society, Career and Technical. You know, so all of a sudden those become exclusionary activities to different groups of students, so they're not open to everybody. Additionally, within that is a stipend for the freshman class advisor, the sophomore class advisor, the junior, senior. So again, those aren't what we would perceive to be the traditional club activity. So when Ms. Hines and I reviewed all of the clubs and looking at our high schools, you'll see that there's really only, when you think about what a true club is, 16 or 17 at each of our high schools. You know, and I want us to be – so with regard to the reporting out, we've asked our club advisors to share with us information on the clubs in terms of attendance, activities that they were doing, and that was presented to the board in a very raw form at this point. That's information that we're working on a format with assistant principals at each of the buildings who oversee the clubs, and I think we'll get to a place where we can actually look at and review, one, who's attending a club, and then two, the frequency, the duration, the types of activities that they're doing. I would like us to also perhaps just to be cautious about quantifying a club's efficacy purely by the number of students who are participating. Because if you look at a club, let's say it's the Lego club, and we don't have a Lego club at our high schools, but a Lego club at a high school may only have 5 kids who are participating in it. But that may be the only thing at the high school that those students have a niche for. And so we just have to be mindful of that, not to just jump right to a number. And I'm not saying that anybody's doing that. I just want us to be sure, because sometimes it's that one activity that might not be a large draw, but it might be the draw for the particular students enrolled in it.
And I think, though, if we get that format that you're talking about, yeah, it would make it easier for the board members to see, okay, this is the format for each club. This is what they're doing. This is how many times they're meeting. And if it's consistent across all the clubs, because when we get the information, like you said, it's in a very raw format, so it's hard to kind of evaluate what's going on in the clubs because it's reported differently. So I think if you do get that format, it will help us and also the administration of the building as well.
Just couple of questions. John, the $487,199, are we still taking the school treasurer stipends out of our club account, or was that moved out of there?
Yeah.
We still are?
Sure.
We're not taking it out of ECAF.
We're not taking these. Each building had a school treasurer?
The district is paying for the treasurer co-curricular funds.
It's not coming out of this $487. So this is purely club.
No, that is coming out of there.
So what is the dollar amount, Donette?
The treasurer varies by building. I could get you that number.
But of the $487,000, is it more than $100,000?
Maybe $5,000 each, maybe? $5,000? Yeah.
So that number for 400 clubs, really, that comes off of that as well?
Correct.
I asked a few months back about robotics. We had a very, very large number of students that participate in robotics. I think the number was 175 kids. Okay, and we have one robotics club, and I had requested what the cost of a second robotics team would cost. But then a committee member came up with an idea as to maybe increasing the advisorship within the robotics club.
Yeah, I think the robotics team wants to remain as one group.
No, and I understand that. But
the administration will look at adding additional advisors.
Have we built
a
contingency into the budget to allow for that additional position?
Not a particular number. It's still within the scope of the entire amount allocated to the building.
So is that something that's going to happen next year?
Yeah, I think that, you know, within the club allocations, that if we had a situation where I think the number is 115 students this year, if we had a situation that warranted an additional advisor again, like this year, we would definitely support that with the additional advisor.
Okay. Yeah. So we're gonna look at possibly doing that next year.
Yeah, it would be dependent upon the numbers.
Okay.
Yeah.
My third question is, I know in years past, we always had in years past, Special Olympics was really, really big in Sachem, and the more I go to Special Olympics, I go to at least one a year, I see like less students from Sachem participating in that. And I'm wondering, are we putting money towards coaches within that? And does that, would that go into a club, or would that come out of a coach's or athletic budget line?
I'm not exactly sure of the question.
Well, the question is, are we providing coaches for the Special Olympics to be able to get more kids involved in that and be able to budget to allow them to go on trips to Special Olympic events at a stadium?
This is the first I'm hearing that question. Yeah. It's nothing I've been aware of.
Teachers have volunteered, but yeah. My knowledge, there's been no involvement with coaches.
No involvement. So it's all volunteer work.
Correct. And typically our special education teachers are volunteering.
Okay. I mean, you know, in years past, and you've been around for quite some time, sir, right?
Yes, I have.
We've had. I don't mean
what
that.
What are you
no.
saying?
we've had paid coaches in years past and have lost those coaches, or we've never had paid coaches for Special Olympics?
Not to my knowledge.
So I mean, we've never had that.
But not to my knowledge.
Okay.
That's something we could certainly look into as to, one, whether or not we've had that historically, and we can get back to the board on that. Okay.
Sir.
Dr. Graham. Not a budget question, John, so you're off the hook. Does every club require an advisor? You just mentioned like the Lego Club, for an example. So are we paying a stipend to an advisor for the Lego Club? It can't be just a couple of kids in a room staying after school to...
No.
No, all of the clubs have to have an advisor. It's actually, those are contractual positions within the teacher's bargaining agreement. And they're defined within the teacher's bargaining agreement with regard to the number of students on a club, the frequency of meeting. So they have some pretty clear parameters on what type of club requires, what type of stipend, and what the level of the pay for that individual is.
So my follow-up question to that would be extra help. You know, we talked about tutors. Tutors are getting $70 an hour, $60 an hour. I was just on a college visit, and a very bright young man said, I just find the smartest kid in the class, and he helps me with my studies. So if you – is there an opportunity for a kid – I don't want to call it the math club because now I need an advisor that I have to pay for the math club, but just kids staying after school with a really smart kid who understands pre-calc and helping some kids in a classroom to save their parents a couple of bucks, and maybe this kid's going to be a teacher or a professor someday, and maybe he can reach the kids better because he's closer in age to them. Is there an opportunity for that after school?
You know – yeah, I think Bill's mentioning that right now. Oftentimes, a part of the charter or the requirements of membership to, let's say, a National Honor Society or a World Language Honor Society is the ability to do some peer tutoring. I don't know what the mechanism looks like in our schools right now for a student who requires or is interested in having, let's say, English tutoring to reach out to the NHS, but we can get that information for you.
Thank you.
The girls would like to
sure.
get on that.
We have our resident experts.
So at East, we have every...
I apologize. I should have directed the question to you. Next time.
At East, we have the National Honor Society. So every Tuesday, like, there's the homework club. So people that are in the club will go, and then people that need tutoring will go. And they have, like, specific days for specific subjects. So they can go whenever they want for English 1 week, then math and science. And then the teachers will, like, recommend students to help other students for, like, extra points on tests and stuff.
And then at North, actually, it's a requirement for National Honor Society to tutor, and we have the tutoring center, and it's like a room in the back of the library where during your lunch period you can go and sit there, and there's like a window in the front, and whichever students are in charge of it that period put on the window what subject they're capable of tutoring in. So if you walk by and you need tutoring in something and you see that that person's available for that subject, you can stop on it and get tutored there also during class, or during lunch, I mean.
It sounds like that might be something that's well-publicized to the students, but perhaps not well-publicized to parents. So that's something that we can look into, how to get that message out there that those opportunities exist.
Yes. And just in determining how many advisors per club, is that like going through the list? And I know this is raw, so there might be some numbers that are off, but some enrollments seem high with one advisor, but then other enrollments seem low with two advisors. And you know, what just caught my eye was like our the Model UN Club, because I think, you know, that's like over 50 students maybe, and I think they go to the city. Is that the club? That's you? Oh, there you go. See, I should turn this way. So, but that's one advisor, right?
Yeah, we had two advisors. Well, no, they used to have two advisors, and then when the club has been struggling for years, we've had to fight for it to have it. Every year I've been in the club, we've had to fight to get it back because we always lose it. And when it was finally, like, revamped and we got it back, we only had room for one advisor. We are going to the city. It's actually this weekend. It's from Friday to Monday for a conference. But we are bringing another teacher. Okay. We're bringing, like, so we have our advisor coming and then another teacher has to come with us. Last year, two other teachers came with us. This year, it's one other teacher. Besides that, we do have one advisor, though. But we
when you do your trips, you would have...
Besides when we go to conferences at other schools that are local, that's just our advisor comes with us, just the advisor. But when we go to the city this weekend, we're bringing two teachers.
All right, thank you.
I would also say that sometimes when the board receives a report of the clubs, or you may see on a board agenda when a club advisor is appointed, sometimes teachers are doing Model UN, let's say, and I, as a teacher, perhaps can't commit to the weekly meeting for whatever personal reason, or I know that I'm a social studies teacher and my English counterpart would be a good complementary pair because we work well together. There are times when you look at some of those clubs and you'll see multiple advisors. That, in many instances, means that they're splitting the stipend. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's one person getting a full stipend and then a second getting the full stipend.
Thanks for the – it was just confusing to see, you know, large numbers with one. And,
right.
You know.
So you would have seen those at the time that we appointed the advisors.
Right.
So that it would be a some
– a split stipend.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. That's basically my presentation for this evening. You know, just a reminder again to everybody, these are preliminary numbers. We're still working on the projections. We still have to sit and do staffing. Dr. Morrow, Ms. Hines, Dr. Graham are working right now on staffing component. On our next presentation, which is next week, we will go over the curriculum component of the budget, which will wrap up basically the entire initial draft. That component will probably just show the current rollover budget of staff. The two future presentations will probably have any changes, just as we did last year. And just as a reminder, next time we're going to look at general education programs, our general OCED program, the guidance office, library media centers, and child care. And vote on May 15th. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
You're fancy.
Are you ready, Ken? Yeah. Okay, we'll continue with the agenda. Just so the community realizes, there are two visitor sections. The first visitor section is only for questions regarding questions on the budget. I have none for that. There is a second visitor section after this budget is complete, after this agenda is complete, and we'll go over the whoever puts in a question at that point. So I'm not passing you by. I'm just going to come in the second half. Okay. Approval of the minutes. Vic, second, Sarah. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Business items, 3A1 through 3A2. Motion, please. Sarah, I'm sorry. Laura, second. Bill, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Personnel items, consent agenda 4A1 through 4C7. Motion, please. Sarah, second. Rob, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. We are on page 7. Action items, consent agenda 511 through 513. Motion, please. Bill, second. Sarah, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. 514, approval of proposed 2018-19 calendar. Motion, please. Laura, second. Bill, any questions? Dorothy.
Dr. Graham, as far as the next calendar for the 18-19 school year, I know in our packet you had just sent up some backup information for that as far as some things aren't on the calendar yet because of the regions. Yeah, yeah.
Sure, I'll just elaborate on that. You may be following school calendars. don't know. That's what I do. So if you're interested in looking at school calendars, what you'll notice is that for 18-19, there's been a lot of concern throughout the state about the school calendar and the ability of school districts to meet the obligation of 180 days of attendance. And then there's been questions about half days, whether or not those count towards that. And the state is making a change at this point, and they're going to start to move towards looking at hours of instruction so that a half day could count for those particular hours that school was in session. So one of the ways that the state has worked to accommodate districts as they attempt to make their calendar work is they move the region's testing out into the last week of June for next year. So typically it would start a little bit earlier, but the region's testing starts somewhere on, I think, Tuesday, June 18th next year, and the last day of school is Wednesday, June 26th. That's in the last week of June. So that's why our calendar looks a little bit different than it has typically, because the state, quite honestly, changed the testing time. And that's good for us. It gives us some more flexibility with regard to our calendar. So one of the things you'll notice is that this is just the days that we have sessions. This doesn't indicate when half days are or anything like that. We'll work on, as a district, as we develop our calendar, we'll work on finalizing the district calendar, but this is so people can plan their 2018 to 2019 accordingly. And they'll also be, I think, perhaps what I may have anticipated your next question. There'll also be implications for proms and graduations at that point, because school ending on a Wednesday, you know, if you do your graduations the weekend prior, that means that students may still have Regents exams to take, and we couldn't do graduation before they're completed with those Regents exams. So that's something that we're working with our high school staff and with the Board of Education to determine the dates of those significant events. Did I anticipate the question?
Okay. So we're coordinating to make sure that if the prom is one night, the region is not the next day.
Yeah. That's what we want to avoid also, is that you don't want to have your prom in a week where a student could potentially have a physics exam the next day, let's say, or let's say a graduation requirement of math or English language arts. And so that's what we're working with right now to make sure that we have one, you know, because we have the two high schools in our district, we have to make sure that our proms fit, you know, so that we don't have both proms on one night, and then the graduation, the same thing. So that's what we're working on. As soon as we have information on that, we'll share that one with the board and then with our community as it's all finalized.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. 515, appointment to the Sachem Legislative Committee. Motion, please. Laura, second. Bill, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? The motion is carried. We have nine members. Anybody here tonight from the new? Okay, one? Just one. Okay. Ms. Platon is here. She was right, second row right there. She's ahead at this time. You speak to her. She'll let you know when everything is, you know, meetings are coming or whatever. But she's your contact person at this point. Okay? Any other questions you could ask the board? Not a problem. Okay? Okay. That was approved? Was that approved? Okay. 521, donations. Hiawatha Elementary School, $10,000. Motion, please. Bill, second. Laura, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. 522, a motion for donation to from Nokomis, $4,228.53. First, Mike, second. Bill, any question? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. 523, donation to Tamarack Elementary School, $3,604.77. Motion, Mike, second. Bill, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. 524, Sagamore Middle School, donation $2,925. Motion, Mike, second. Rob, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. 531, approval of transfer inactive activity accounts. Motion, please. Bill, second. All right. Rob, seconded. Sarah has a question.
Sure. So this has to do with our board policy 5252 that requires, when there are inactive accounts for 2 years, to close those accounts. So what we determine is that there were student activity accounts remaining for the closed schools. And one, we wanted the money to follow those students. So Gate Lot is all of the students who went to Gate Lot will go to North. All the students who went to Sequoia will go to East. And all the students who went to Tecumseh will go to East as well. So that's how we picked that. Now, the reason we picked the student government is oftentimes the student government acts as an umbrella organization for other activities. So the student government is also not something that's exclusive to any one particular group, robotics or cheer or whatever club it is. That's something that's a wide umbrella that captures all of those students.
Sure.
Okay. Any other questions? Mike?
$24,470. That's a nice one-year hit to Sachem East High School. Are we going to supervise to make sure that they don't have one big blowout with the $24,000 and spread it over a couple of years?
We absolutely will. We want to make sure that the students who are whose families were involved in raising that money have an opportunity to be beneficiaries of it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Okay, we're up to 5-3-2. Approval of budget transfers, $50,000 or greater. Motion, Bill, second, Laura. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. 5-4-1, recommendation from the Committee on Special Education. Motion, Bill, second, Laura. Any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Monthly reports, loss and damage summary. Special education preschool 6B1, determination from the special education dates. Motion, please. Laura, second. Bill, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Subcommittees. We have a legislative. Dana, would you like to say something? Right, legislative committee.
Last night, I emailed Tony and Dr. Graham and Ms. Hines. I emailed them the flyer that will be going out any minute, because I also emailed it to Chris, and it's already out. The promotion for our legislative forum. We have everyone who represents us will be in attendance in some way. Senator Croce will be here, Assemblyman Fitzpatrick, and Assemblyman Murray. They will all be here in person. Our other legislators will be sending a legislative representative from their office. Senator Boyle is hoping to drop by at the very end. He has two other events that night, but he is hoping that if time allows it, he will come for the end of our event. We just have to hope that we get community members to come out. Right. And
then it will be an opportune time to speak to him about the smart schools money, why we're not getting it.
Absolutely. So the question right now, I have reserved both the Little Theater at Samoset and the auditorium. And, you know, in light of what's been going on recently, perhaps we'll get more of community attendance. So I'm thinking that we will go with the auditorium.
The date again?
March 8th. So it's a week from tomorrow. And right now the flyer does say the Little Theater. But I'm thinking, because we did have a number of community members show up tonight for our Health and Safety Committee meeting, and I'm thinking that we'll have more in attendance for the forum. So I think that I probably will switch over to the auditorium. I see some people in agreement up there. Ms. Hines and I will be meeting next week to discuss some issues that we want to make sure are highlighted that night, so that we touch on the really important things that are going on here in Sachem, you know, other than community members, what they come out and the questions that they should ask.
Dana, have you given any thought to have it in here? If we would have put more chairs out, would this room accommodate?
I really don't know how many people will come. In years past, we have had standing room only in the auditorium. Mm-hmm. Last time we had it in the Little Theater, and it was pretty crowded, but there were empty seats. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and that's a big difference in the number of seats filled. So I really don't know. This room probably could accommodate. If you recall, there were a couple of times that we had it in here because we did more of a meet and greet with the mm-hmm. legislators. It was more informal, and that worked out very well.
Yeah, I'm only thinking about it because of the speaker and the ability to ask questions and whatnot.
Right. I don't know how many seats are in here.
I'm just thinking that as we start really planning it out and thinking about it, mm-hmm. we could perhaps report back to Dr. Graham, and he can share with all of you, and then if there's any thoughts about feedback where we should be placing it or any other ideas around it, we would certainly make sure that, you know, we would organize around
that. You know, in the past, the custodial staff at Somerset has been so accommodating. They set up a podium. They set up, you know, a dais on the stage, and they have microphones for every, you know, there's usually two people are sharing one microphone, you know, just like when we do meet the candidates. And then we are able to have questions from the audience as well. So if we want a situation like this where someone can come up to the microphone, we have that capability, just like when we would hold a Board of Ed meeting in the in the auditorium. So we're good. Okay. Laura?
Go ahead.
No, ladies first.
Did we share, or are we going to share with our high schools to get some high school students, especially those?
Yeah, I'm going to put it out there and hope that they, you know, have their students participate.
Right.
You know, whatever incentive they may want to offer to have their students come down and participate. But we're not going to have planned questions in advance.
Right. No,
which I know they do at the Longwood Breakfast. You know, we have seen that. We've seen the students go up and they have prepared questions in advance. We're not going to be doing that. We hope that the students will come and, you know, ask questions on their own and participate on their own.
Right, because I think getting students involved and, you know, understanding the politics of things is very important in these times.
Yeah,
Thank you.
Couldn't agree more. And we see that. We see that going on around the country.
Yes.
So students are certainly aware, and they are advocating for themselves.
Have students come and voice their concerns with our elected officials.
Couldn't agree more.
Would we be able to broadcast this forum on the radio station?
I don't know the answer to that.
And the only reason why I say that is I would use that as my tactic to get the actual elected officials here. If they hear that they're going to be on the radio, they'll be more in tune to come themselves than to send an aide.
I do have to say, because, you know, after all these years, I've gotten to know their staff members in particular. I talk to them on the phone all the time, the women that work in their office. And I truly do believe that some of them, if not all of them, who are not attending, it's because they do have other things booked that night. I don't know that for a fact. I don't see their schedules. But certainly, we can look into that.
We can check that.
If we're able to set up broadcasting at a football game, there's no reason why we can't set it up for an auditorium or any place. So I would, maybe Dr. Graham, we can contact the people that do that to see if it's free. I know it's only a week.
I can help if you need help.
There you go.
Nothing else to do.
Just a little experience, right?
Well, that's a good idea, Vic. Thank you. Get them on the radio. We'll get them here. And I think the students are an excellent idea because they'll be here. Go ahead, Dorothy.
So, Dana, now that we have other members on the legislative committee and I'm on the committee as well, Kelly's here too. I think Bevan from last year, they want to remain on the committee. And now we have the new members. If you're going to be meeting with Mrs. Hines prior, is that during the day or is that in the evening?
We actually, just as of last night, we're discussing we're going to meet and we're going to look to find a time that's good for both of us. I'm looking to meet with her at this time and then to meet with the committee after that.
I think it would be nice, though, to get we could discuss it after the meeting, but I think it would be nice to have the committee members, if there was an opportunity to meet with them prior, to be able to get them involved, especially before the forum, to see what ideas they have.
At this time, we're going to meet just the two of us, and then we'll look and see if there's time that would allow for a committee meeting prior to that. But we're going to meet just the two of us.
After the meeting, we'll discuss it.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Dan. I'm sorry, Sal.
I just have one more thing to add, if that's all right.
Yep.
I mentioned at the last meeting that my son had been invited to the Board of Regents meeting last month, and we did have the opportunity to go to Albany. And he had an opportunity to meet with Commissioner Ilya and Deputy Commissioner Ebert and the Chancellor, Betty Rosa. And it was really very exciting. He was introduced at the Board of Regents meeting, and the Chancellor, when she introduced him to all the other regents, she introduced him and said, this young man is one of the students that will be benefiting from the new superintendent's determination. And all the regents applauded, and it was a really, really touching, moving moment, and I want to share that with you because he's one of our students, one of your students, and it was quite exciting. So.
Thank you, Dan. Sal?
I'm not.
You hit it by mistake. Hit it again.
On March 8th, which is next week,
We could encourage the teachers who teach at the high school in political participation in government to invite their students to maybe give them an assignment, if you will, prepare some questions that they might want to ask, get them involved in an active political process situation during that evening. And regarding getting airtime, you might get somebody there that could encourage them to come, namely Jay Oliver, who runs a show at 6 to 9 and is well versed in political process. I know that personally. So I think that that might be something that might increase the need to have the auditorium. You have a number of students in 11th grade and in the 11th and 12th grade, which should be taking political courses, to come to the school for that night and participate actively in a process. And maybe that might get young people engaged in the political thing that's taking place. Of course, some of them will be voting this November and also for the school board. So let them be part of the process. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Dorothy, anything on the audit committee?
No, the audit committee meets quarterly based on the auditor's needs. And
okay, so
right
nothing.
Now we don't have anything going on actually for another couple months.
Yeah, I mean, the internal auditors are in district right now. They have been for the last few weeks. They come 1 or 2 days a week, so they're working on their assignment for this year. So as soon as that's ready, I'll send the draft to the audit committee, and then we can convene to go over it.
Okay. Thank you, John. Okay. That's it for that. And I think we go right to the – our first visit is Mr. Joseph Perez. I think that light is already green, Mr. Perez. You could leave it the way it is. I think we can hear you.
Well, if not, I can still shout.
Okay.
All right. Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Joseph Perez. I'm a lieutenant with the Ronkonkoma Fire Department, and I've been a member for the last 15 years. I am here tonight to tell you about a program that is not well known here in Suffolk County. You have to forgive me. I'm not very well with public speaking. So, I mean, you put me on a fire scene, that's completely different. Put me in front of people, nah. Anyway, as I was saying, I'm here tonight to tell you about a program that is not well known. That is not well known in Suffolk County that can benefit the children as well as any family members on achieving a 2-year degree, and at the same time serving their community. This program was first set up to bring more people into the fire department and also into the ambulance corps, where you can earn a 2-year degree depending on your GPA with full reimbursement. Needless to say, this can be a beneficial, this could be a financial help to families as well as starting a career for our young adults. The program that I'm speaking about is called SERVES, the Suffolk Educational Program for Retention of Volunteer Emergency Services. The program was started by Suffolk County Legislature, where a student can be reimbursed depending on their GPA. In other words, if their GPA is a 3.75 to a 4.0, which is an A average, they'll get full tuition reimbursement back. From a 3.0 to a 3.74, 75%, 2.0 to 2.9 to 50%. And all that Suffolk County is asking for is for a 2-year degree for this individual to come in and to get 5 years of service to their fire department as well as the ambulance department. And this can be and it can be a member and excuse me. Let me start all over again.
It's all right, take your time.
And all that Suffolk County is asking for is that for a 2-year degree to give 5 years of service to a fire department or to an ambulance department and to be a member in good standings inside that department. The list of approved colleges that a student can go to, just to name a few, are Delphi University, St. Joseph's College, SUNY Stony Brook, Truro College, Suffolk County Community College, and also LIU. And even though it is only a 2-year degree, this can be a stepping stone onto something even more for the students. I know several people who took advantage of this opportunity and have made careers for themselves. One person, in particular from my fire department, started out on an explorer program, became an EMT, and is now an emergency room nurse, while another person is also now studying to be a flight medic. Two other people who went to Suffolk County Community received a degree for fire science. They are now, one of them is now a lieutenant into their FDNY, and several other members are now probies going into the fire academy. But these are only some of these careers, but these are only a few of these careers. Now, they chose to go for these fire careers or emergency services careers. One person, individual, doesn't want that, but yet still wants to obtain a two-year degree. And by doing so is going for business school. And I have the list over here of certain of the approved colleges. So depending on what it is, you know, here's an opportunity where certain individuals, certain kids, when they come out of high school, they really have no idea what they want to do. But at least this way they could come and they could actually learn something. Being part of the fire department and also the ambulance department, all right, now I'm going to put this away and I'm going to speak from the heart. Being part of the fire department and ambulance department, more than anything, is one of the most gratifying things that you could ever have into your life, all right? Going up to a total stranger, helping them out, all right? And all that you ask for is just to say thank you. When that person says thank you, you feel like $1 million. Now, here are kids from high school who really have no idea what they want to do with themselves. They really don't. Come on, who here when they were 17, 18 years old knew what they wanted to do? Nobody. All right? Some people came as time went by. They went into education. All right? And they went and they studied. But now we get some kids who really have no idea what they want to do. This program gives them an opportunity for two things. One, to go out and get themselves an actual career. Or if not, just a stepping stone. Granted, it's just a two-year degree. But look what happened to these people. They went and they made themselves even more. Now, how many high school kids, when they come out of high school, don't know what they want to do? They don't. But with this program, they actually can get a certain value about themselves. They could start something, all right? By going up into the volunteer service, all right? It's, unfortunately out here, a lot of people that come over and say, oh, you're just a volunteer. No, we're more than just that. We come, we dedicate ourselves. We put time away from our families. I mean, listen, I could tell you how many times I had into an argument with my wife because we had a call on Thanksgiving and I left my house. Or even on New Year's Eve when I had a house full of people, 36 people, and boy, did I catch hell for this. But I left for an ambulance call for a 10-year-old, all right, who went and got burns on her hands. And her father and mother came over and just said thank you. Again, this is something where a kid who really has no direction tried to give them some direction, give them something to actually go forward for. And again, it's just a two-year degree, but it's a stepping stone where that individual can actually come and become themselves. Find themselves. Being in the fire department will teach you leadership, all right? We've done everything, all right? From going to an ambulance call where it was something very simple as just trying to help somebody up off the floor, and at the same time, maybe a week later, cutting somebody out of a car, or worse yet, having somebody who has an overdose, and we're giving them CPR to bring them back. That might be that one little spark where a kid who is 17, 18 years old can actually go and say, you know what, I want to make a difference. I want to go and I want to become a nurse. Maybe I want to be a doctor. Or they could just turn around and say, hell, this isn't for me. I'm going to go into a business school. But either way, if we could go and enlighten kids or young adults, because that's exactly what they are. I mean, hell, we just said it. They're going to be voting soon. Well, why can't we help them with themselves? And also be an active part in their community. Unfortunately, Suffolk County, as well as Nassau County, we're dwindling on members. So what better way to actually come and try and give these kids some type of course to go forward with? That's all. And all that I am asking, if possible, if you could go and bring this guide to your principals, to your guidance counselors. And there are certain kids who well, may not go to college. But you know what? Let's face it. Would you rather flip burgers or work in Target, stacking boxes, or Kohl's, or ShopRite? Not that there's anything wrong with it, because I did it. Or would you rather become and learn how to become an EMT? Be an active member of your society, active member of your community. Have a sense of pride. When you join the fire department, you do not join as a member, but you come in and you join as a family. You join a brotherhood. And that alone should give them enough pride in themselves to realize that there is something more to life than just this, that they have other responsibilities, not only toward themselves, but other people also. So I just have just a couple of...
Can you give that to the clerk when you, before you leave?
Certainly. And if you want, I'll stick around afterwards. If you have any questions,
yeah, well,
I'll give you my
number.
Before
you leave, sure.
Mr. Perez, thank you. I think that Sal Nicosia had actually mentioned the program and then gave you my contact information.
Yes,
think
you
called the office on February 9th.
Yes, I did.
I
just want to tell you about this gentleman. The library, when I went there, and he was trying to recruit at the library, and we engaged in a conversation.
Yes, we did.
He did a great job, by the way.
Thank you very much.
And I want to tell you something. He's the very. Everybody here should stand up and give this man applause.
Stop.
Come on. Let's show him that we appreciate what he does. Come on, show them.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right, you got your leg exercise. Thank you. Okay.
And again, afterwards, if you want, I'll stick around so that way you'll be able to...
I'd like to learn more about the program, Mr. Perez, so thank you. And if you want to give us the flyers, that's something that we can look into and make sure that our students are getting that opportunity. So thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Is there a contact number on there, Mr. Perez, that could reach you?
Number.
You have it? Okay, that's fine.
Mr. Perez,
yes.
when you know, I know I receive in the mail every year for the fire department donation.
Right.
Probably be a good idea to slip a letter in there to the parents, because a lot of the people in the community don't do social media. The kids aren't going to report back to them. But I know as a father, I get that thing in the mail. I'm going to tell my kid, guess what you're signing up for, pal?
Well, you know what? That is a good idea. But, again, you have to know what fire district you live in, okay? I live in Ronkonkoma Fire Department. Well, every fire department should do it, but I'm speaking – well, again, now you have to understand something. Where Sachem is, okay, just on Sachem North, all right, I believe that the kids that go there, there are seven different fire departments, okay, that actually go, that kids actually go just to Sachem North. Now, for me to go over and try to go to each and to every one, no, it's going to be a little bit difficult. That's why when I spoke with Sal, that's why I'm here today, to try and get the word out on this, okay? Listen – both one hand washes the other, both hands wash the face, all right? That's it. I mean, you want to turn around and try and produce good individuals, good, hardworking, honest, decent people who have pride in themselves. Well, guess what? We're in the business to go over and bring people in and give them that confidence, all right? So why can't we all both you know, just work together on this?
Thank you very much, Mr. Perez. Jim Kiernan. They should know. The things are outside. I'll ask if anybody wants to know.
I won't be very long, but Mr. Falco, Dr. Graham, board members, administrators, the Honorable Chris Clayton. Everybody on this board knows how passionate I am about school security. And you know it because I've inundated you with emails for the past 6 months that you're probably just pulling your hair out. I want to thank you for the patience of listening to me. And I also want to say that the safety meeting that was just put on by Dr. Morrow was terrific. It was well attended. It was a very productive meeting, and I think a lot of ideas were discussed. Everybody on the board knows through my emails that I believe that having a security audit is the most important thing. I went over it at the meeting, and I'm going to go over it again. And also, I think everybody's aware that I have written a plan that's really at its infant stages that I'm not going to burden you with today. But I do have a meeting Friday with Dr. Morrow, and I believe next week with Dr. Graham, and I'll go over it with him, both of them. We on Friday too?
I'll be at that one with Dr. Morrow.
Oh, so we're canceling the other one.
Is he on the second one? Not yet. Well, don't care.
That's fine. Okay. Friday for both of you is great. I'm good with that. I'm good with that. I think nowadays we have to really look at this completely different. School safety is not like it was. It's a whole different thing. You know, one time it was just security guards checking passes, making sure kids didn't cut, breaking up fights, all the things that we, when we were students, remember. We live in a different world today. And all I say to you is have an open mind when we start discussing, and I think down the road after I speak to Dr. Graham and Dr. Morrow, it may start moving forward and you guys will get more participation in what my plan is. And the discussions then could go over all the details of it. It's, I don't, like I said, I really don't want to go over it now because it's too detailed and I'm not going to take your time. But suffice it to say, there's nothing like it. Not in the state. There's nothing like this. This is brand new. This isn't like, I think it was just Miller Place hiring four retired guys lately, made front page or something. It's not that. All right? It's definitely more in detail. But that's really all I'm going to say now. I just want to thank you again for opening your minds and for the meeting with you two gentlemen. I think that'll be productive as well. And again, the meeting that was held in here was very productive. Listening to the parents is so important. It really is. You can't, you know, I'm a security expert and I could tell you a million different things. But the parents are the ones that hear from their children. Their children are ones that have to feel safe. If they're not feeling safe, we're doing something wrong. So we really have to open it up. That's why I call that a comprehensive security audit, not something, I don't know, just check your cameras, your windows, your doors, your parking lots. That's necessary, but that's not it. You have to get into the fine details. A woman in the meeting earlier stated that during the lockdown drills, her son is in a particular classroom all the time those drills happen. Now, it just probably so happens that way. But the problem with that is that child won't know how to react if he's in the gym. Now, we would never have even known that as a problem. You know, everybody does the lockdown drills. There's a set protocol for it. But we would never understand that there may be some students that are just locked into one particular scenario and they're not given any other scenarios. So I think I've spoken even longer than I was going to speak. But anyway, I will keep the board appraised of my progress in this, and I'm sure you'll hear it from the administrators as well. Okay? Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Does anybody wish to speak that hadn't put in a card on any item they'd like? They're certainly welcome to still come up and do that. Go ahead, sir. All right. Just give us your name. That's all.
Matt Balkum, and I'm on the list.
Okay,
the,
Matt.
Legislative.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Just one quick question. The vestibules that have not been installed, is there any estimate cost of what they're going to run? Or ballpark, at least?
Yeah, the vestibules, including the hardware that somebody would have to scan in to be let into the building, are roughly somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.5 to $3 million.
Okay, and that would outfit every school in the district.
That would be every building in the district. Yeah. So that was included in the Smart Schools plan, which is this reimbursable plan that the state has. Sachem got an allocation of $11 million, and we included that in part. So what our quandary is right now is that the state facilities office approved the building of them, but they didn't approve the Smart Schools plan yet. And what we're being told is that there's a delay of 12 to 18 months on approval for Smart School. So I want to be cautious for all of us. And this is not something that the state is doing to us because it's part of their process. What I would say we should be advocating for, perhaps, and this might be something that the legislative committee thinks about, is we should be advocating for our local representatives to seek relief in terms of expediting the approval process for projects associated with security. So that's why we've been talking that if there's not a way for them to expedite that approval process, is there a way for us to fund those projects out of our general operating budget so that we can get it done as quickly as possible? And that's something that we've been having a conversation with both as an administration and I think at least in the beginning stages with the Board of Education to try to get this done. If Smart Schools is not approved right away, to get it done right away.
Okay. Then, and mind you, tonight was the first time I've ever been here for a budget presentation. So maybe I'm comparing apples to oranges here. My daughter is a sixth grade student at this school. Every day, she's waking up when I'm going to work. I give her a kiss on the forehead, see you later. And I'll be honest with you, there are days I'm getting in the car, going to work, and I worry if I'm going to see her for dinner. Okay? So the presentation, there's almost $3 million requested for an increase in the budget. Approximately, am I right? Yeah. Okay, I mean, just ballpark. I had $2.5, $3 million. I don't know. I think priority should be the vestibules and stay within the budget of 17, 18. I mean, I can't see how we can say, you know, items A, B, and C are important, more important than protecting our students. And I find it hard to be able to vote to increase the budget by $3 million and we're not taking care of our future, our kids.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We agree with you.
Okay.
We would like to do the security vestibules, if not through Smart Schools, through our current operating budget and get them done. So it would that increase to next year's budget has to do with a whole multitude of factors. There are program enhancements within there, but we wouldn't be doing those things without already having done the security upgrades.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Thank you.
Right. Anyone else? Sir, go ahead. Just give us your name, that's all.
My name is Vance DiPietro. How are you? I just have a couple of quick questions, also in reference to security and safety at the school. I'm not too familiar with all of the processes and procedures. So I guess my first question to the board is, what is the exact procedure in the event that there is a school shooting, that a shooter does enter the building in any of the schools? What is the exact procedure to keep our students safe outside of a lockdown drill where I'm assuming students are locked in a classroom and basically told to hide and wait? To me, that seems like it's not enough just hoping that my kid is not in the wrong place at the wrong time waiting for help. Are there any other procedures in place? I know you said that you've put in a whole bunch of security cameras, but are those security cameras manned to prevent somebody from entering the school? Are they watched? Or are the security cameras for an after effect to see what happened, see what went wrong? I'm just trying to think of ways to prevent some of these things from happening. None of these schools that these shootings happen at ever expect it's going to happen at their school. We never expect it's going to happen here. But there are some serious, serious holes in safety and security within this district. One of them that I see personally as a parent is after-school sports being hosted in the schools. I could tell you I was at an event yesterday here. I walked right in the front door. There was nobody represented from the school, no sort of security, no custodian, no teacher, no nothing. I walked right into the gym. The gym is 30 feet from the front door with probably about, 30 to 50 kids plus coaches plus maybe another 50, 60 parents. There is nothing preventing anybody from walking in the front door of this school and walking right into the gym and having a situation what happened down in Florida. So what can immediately be done to help prevent that from happening? Because the doors are wide open. The doors aren't even locked after school. I mean, you just walk right in.
I mean, Mr. DiPietro, I think you emailed me right earlier this evening. I apologize. I didn't get back to you. I was meetings.
Understandable.
But one of the things that we would not do was discuss the procedures for all of the different drills that we have to deal with different emergencies. I hope that's for obvious reasons that we wouldn't divulge what we're asking students to do. One of the things that we did do earlier this year, though, is for parents to have a better understanding of the different type of drills that we do utilize, is we provided a description on our website of what each of those are, and I could repost that for people, where it doesn't give specifics, but it gives an example of what does a lockdown mean, what is a lockout, what is an evacuation drill, and so that people have a better understanding. With regard to the access to our campus after schools, we agree with you. Those are things that we're looking at right now. I think that those are things that we have to absolutely shore up. Some of that is staffing, quite honestly, to have somebody manning the doors of every one of our buildings after school. Short of locking them and not allowing people in, then we have to have staffing there for the ebb and flow of traffic. With regard to the cameras and the monitoring, I think I had mentioned earlier that we have over 1,000 cameras throughout the school district. Those are monitored 24 hours a day. So we have guards monitoring that, and then we have roving guards that will go out to respond. But that doesn't prevent somebody from getting in. That's as soon as you notice that something happens and it's an issue, that's when you respond. And so I think these are things that we recognize and that we're interested in working on with our community. And that's why later this month we're going to have a security summit, a forum for people to come express ideas. You heard Mr. Kiernan earlier. We have people in this district who have expertise or have ideas, and those are the things that we want to hear from all of you because we share your concern for the safety of our kids.
And just one final question. As far as Samoset itself and the security that's here during the day, how many security guards are there? I was told that there was approximately one for about 900 students. Is there just one security person here at Samoset during the day, or is there more than that?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we have a number of roving guards throughout the district, but the person who's stationed, we have one.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Okay. Anyone else? This lady first. Yes.
Hi. Good evening. Hiya.
Just give us your name, please.
My name is Stephanie Giralo. I am the mom of two young children at Winona. And I know it's late in the evening, and I know we've spoken a lot about security, but I just wanted to mention as a parent, it is tough for for us to sit by and plan and wait for answers. And I've asked some parents to kind of come together and to share ideas. I think we've got lots of resources in the community and lots of ideas and ways that we can work together to provide a safer school. They are very high cost and high technology solutions, and also very low cost and low technology solutions that we might be able to implement very, very soon. I thought about getting a small group of parents together, threw it out on Facebook, and got an overwhelming response. So we've secured a room at the Summerfield Clubhouse on Tuesday, March 6th, where some parents are coming together. I would love to invite the board, the administrators. This is not a them versus us. This is let's come together as a community and see what we can do and propose ideas that might make our school safer sooner than later. Because we can plan as much as we'd like, but something could happen tomorrow. And I think it's really important that we use the resources that are available in our community. We've got wonderful security officers, police, detectives, folks that are willing to partner with us. And if we can, little by little, just start making some small changes, I think we can provide a more secure environment, not only for our children, but for all our teachers and faculty that are in our buildings every day. Thank you.
Thank you. What's the location again, March 6th?
March 6th. It will be at the Summerfield Clubhouse in Holtzville, and it's at 7 p.m. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Most of you know me, Michelle Favaro-Campbell. I want to actually say that I could not kiss my children on the forehead every day and not think they're coming home. So when I send my children to school, I believe that you guys are trying to keep them safe. And the truth is, we go to movie theaters. I take them in the car. The car is way more dangerous. I'm on an airplane multiple times a month. I'm not afraid to send them to SACHM every day. And I think that's important to recognize that there are things we can do. I know the vestibules are on their way and that it's very frustrating to me as well, all of you. But I think it's important to acknowledge the work that you do do to try to keep our kids safe. And while there are improvements, I think that it's important to also know that I shouldn't know everything you're doing, because in those situations, that is supposed to not be for the public to know, so that no one else who may have harmful intention would know it either. So I hope you don't think that every parent who sends their child to their school every day thinks they're not coming home, because if that was the case, my kids would not leave my house. I would never let them come if I thought that they were going to be killed. I mean, what happened is horrible, and I am part of the protest, and I hope you'll support any kid who wants to walk out during the walkout. I'm big on that. I believe in student voices, and they're going to be voting, whether it's this year or 2020, you know, very soon. So I support all of that and support the bigger national discussion. But for home, I do not want to see our school in the same vein as Miller Place, because that is when I won't send my kids to school anymore. So I really do thank you guys for what you're trying to do for our community. So thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
Some of you on the board know I'm a SACHM graduate, and I have currently 6 children in the district.
I missed your name. I'm sorry.
It's Sharon Kiernan. I also work for SACHM, and I have kids at Cayuga, I have kids at Samoset, and I have kids at North. One of the things, as an aide working in the schools, I see a certain side of it, and I've helped sub in several schools. I think that we have a lot of policies that aren't fulfilled. So we do lockdown drills. We have teachers on the phone. We have students fooling around. You know, another example, I can second the security at the after-school activities. My kids are in sports. I've personally taken pictures of open doors leading to the outside. I also have experience with one of my children being jumped and me standing with the security guards pointing at the very old security system saying, what about this child? We didn't even notice them because the monitor was so grainy and they couldn't see. I also have another example of one of my children who this year was told by another student that another kid was asking anybody if they'd like to pay money to have him killed. So as a parent of a child, knowing that your child is on someone's list, one of my questions, and I did meet with Dr. Graham, was, what are you doing for this child who has this much hate and anger? And are you getting him help? And, of course, I care about my own kids, but I care about a lot of children. And I think in this community and other communities, we tend to say, as long as it's not my child, I'm not going to worry about it. And I don't feel like that. I was very concerned about that child's mental health. I've dealt with mental health issues with people in my own family, so I know how important that is. And I think that some of the policies that we already have are already there for us, and they're just not being utilized or they're not being fulfilled. So people are letting them go, or let's say suspensions. Oh, this kid's not that bad normally. You know, he doesn't really need what the board has set up for the policy that's enacted. And you know, it's a little frustrating to watch it. I'm a rule follower. I expect my kids to follow the rules. And, you know, as an employee, I follow the rules for SACHM. So, you know, I just feel like you guys sit here, you take your time out of, you know, many, many evenings, and all those things that are written on the website need to be put to use instead of just stuff on paper. Instead of stuff, even we recently, you know, got a new paper that was supposed to go in every classroom, every building, every room. I have no idea what it says. I have no idea. But somebody up here approved for it to be printed. Somebody said this is important. Let's get it to the schools very quickly. I don't have the slightest idea what it said. And that's frustrating. I want to know. I want those kids in my classes that I'm helping in or that I'm the aide in to know what they said. I want my children who attend the school to know what you guys think, what you guys are saying. And I also know that on the hit list that this kid wrote for my child, there was other students on that list. And that's very concerning because today that child might not have the means of getting a gun or getting a bat or whatever it is his intention was, but in 4 years he might. So when my son's walking home from school, I don't know where this child's going to be, and I care about that because I don't want that for him. Obviously, I don't want it for my own kids, but I think that, you know, sometimes we need to look bigger than just as parents and say, nope, it has nothing to do with my kid. I know I discipline my kid. I know I'm taking care of my kid. It's more than that. And even so much as seeing one of the buildings with the door open, I instructed my kids. I said, you see an open door at your school, shut it. And then tell the adult, I'm shutting it. This isn't supposed to be open. When I see it the next time at a meet or wherever I am with my kids, I'm going to walk over and I'm going to shut it myself, because that's what we have to do as a community. We can't just keep on saying, I'm going to let somebody else take care of it. I'm going to let somebody else worry about it. We all have to take that extra step to make sure that we're all doing what we can, not just you guys. And I appreciate all the time you all take, and I thank you for it. And that's all.
Thank you. Anyone else? Don't forget the need.
I have to speak. I was asked to speak for a club. This isn't about any of the safety concerns that people are talking about. I was asked to speak, so I was just waiting patiently. okay, so as mentioned, I'm part of the school's Model United Nations team, and this year, for the first time in 3 years, we're having a conference at our school. I'm the Undersecretary of Communication, so I was in charge of getting in contact with the board, and I just so happened to sit on it, so I thought this was easier. We're having a conference this year at our school. It's the first time in 3 years, which means that we invite other schools to come, and they all get countries, and we all debate about, you know, world politics. So it's the first time we're having a conference, and it's really exciting. It's going to be on March 17th from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., and any of the members of the board are welcome to come and watch. You get to observe. You get to walk into the different committee rooms and observe and then see and help out and stuff. And I was told to invite everyone because I'm, like I said, the Secretary of Communication, so this is just my invitation to you all to come observe. Like I said, March 17th from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., anytime between them. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Emma. I wanted to just address something that was brought up earlier regarding some of the walkouts and the civil disobedience protests related to the school shootings. We are aware that there's three. I think the first one is March 14th. The second is March 24th. It's a Saturday. And the third is April 20th, which is actually the 20th anniversary of the Columbine school shooting as well. And so one of the things that we're doing right now as a district team is we're working with our school administrators to make sure that we honor a student's ability to demonstrate and to exercise his or her First Amendment rights. But we want them to be able to do that safely. What we would not want to do is to have at a high school 1,000 of our students going out to a football field, because that wouldn't be the safest situation. So right now we are working with our leadership team to make sure that we have ways for students to demonstrate and to express themselves on those days. And as soon as we have those plans, and certainly it would have to be age appropriate, right? Some type of protest at a high school could be very different than what is taking place surrounding that day at an elementary school. So it would be something that would be age appropriate as well. That's something we're working on right now with our administrators. We have a meeting already calendared for next week. And as soon as we have that information on how we'll honor a student's ability to do that, we will share that with parents and families as well as our community. You know, Ms. Kiernan, one of the things I just wanted to mention, being a staff member, you would have received an email from me, as did all staff today, and just reminding people of some of the things that we can do that are no cost, right? And simple as not propping a door open, simple as pulling a door shut behind you and making sure that it's locked. And so there are some very simple things that I think we're addressing right now. And, you know, we're working towards all of those things right now and trying to make some changes that can be instantaneous and small but very helpful, and then looking ahead to some of those things that are going to be a little bit heavier of a lift with regard to cost or regard to infrastructure, that kind of thing.
Okay. Just remember the dates. If you have any questions regarding the dates, you can contact district office for the meetings that are coming up. There are going to be some March meetings that are going to be important. Just contact district office. They'll let you know. At this point, I need a motion to go into an executive session to discuss sale of real property, appeal of a resident determination relative to a particular student, a matter relative to a student classified by a CSC as a waiving a disability, and confidential matters relating to school safety. Motion, please. Laura, second. Dorothy. All in favor? Opposed? Thank you very much. We will not be coming out for any votes.